And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 676. We're going to recap your week 14 fab, talk about some June hitting standouts and much, much more. Before we get there, make sure y'all follow me on Twitter at BDIntric. And my guest, as usual, on Mondays, you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how are we doing, my friend?
Good, Bubba. Almost usual. I mean, it was good to hear Mike again last week. It's good to be on the pod, but it's always fun to hear Mike talk. You guys do a good job together. But yeah, good to be back and have a good show again, like you always do. And it's got to be a part of it.
Yep. No, I love having you. So we'll have some fun with that as usual. We'll talk, like I said before the show, we'll talk some June hitting standouts using WRC Plus going from there. And then we'll talk about the fab from the week. As you know, it seems like it's things are slowing down, but they're not. There's every time if 7 o'clock Pacific time hits on my world, I look at fab and it's more interesting than I expected. Let's put it that way. So it's still going a little over halfway through the season now, as expected. Before we get there, why don't you let everybody know what you got going on? You got Sports Ethos and other stuff happening.
Yeah, just that really. Doing my weekly fab article for the NFBC main event, covering 4 starters to add for the upcoming week. And yeah, it comes out Sunday morning, and it's doing all right. I'm every once in a while I get some when you pick 30% or fewer for the rostership cutoff. It's going to be tricky every week, but yeah, I'm making myself work, and I'm not just picking these guys because I do often add these or have these guys in my bid list because that's who was available for me in the main event. So it's I'm putting my money where my mouth is, so to speak.
No, and that's what makes these kind of articles fun. That's why I like doing my fab stuff and everything, because these are the guys, if you ever want, like for some reason, if you're scared of me in a league, which you shouldn't be, you at least have a list of what I'm, this is pretty much my player pool, maybe more than usual, but they're in here. This is where I'm coming from. So keep that in mind when you're doing things. That's kind of like you're talking about. If I'm talking about them this much, it's because I'm actually interested as well, is what it comes down to. So I feel you there. So fun stuff as usual. All right, let's talk about some hitting standouts from the month of June. And June's not over yet, but Ben's going to be back with us next week. So we're going to do pitching, which will be in the first week of July. Talking June pitchers. We'll talk June hitters this week. And it's just kind of a fun talking point because I know we've kind of done similar discussions throughout the year, and it's always fun seeing who pops up in this round. And do we believe in them? Like, most of the time, we're like, no, they're going to take a step back. That's common sense. But do we believe in them enough to like trust in them in fab or to go forward, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll start here again, WRC Plus, and we'll escalate from there. Judge leaves the way, shocker. Stephen Kwan, not a shocker either. The dude's hitting basically 400, 444 in June, actually, if you want to go that far. Royce Lewis, beast. Jordan Alvarez, stud. Start with a fun one here. Josh H. Smith of the Texas Rangers. He has a WRC Plus of 210, Ben, in the month of June. Fifth best on this slate here. Hitting 375, 4 homers, 1 steal. What are your thoughts on Josh Smith? Because this is a guy I added everywhere a long time ago. Then he slowed down. I moved on, and like Royce Lewis came back and stuff, so that's fine. And then he's busted out again. But Josh Jung is taking batting practice Tuesday, and if all goes well, he's going to be activated. So this makes things very, very interesting.
For sure, yeah. You covered the big piece about Josh Smith is Josh Jung coming back. Hopefully this week I have – I'm heavily invested in Josh Jung, as I'm sure listeners have heard me say over the weeks. So I'm hoping that the 2-day break the Rangers give Jung will do the trick. And yeah, but this is more about Josh Smith. And but it is heavily tied to Jung, like you're saying. He actually had Smith had a 3-homer week last week, which is pretty impressive. I don't have Smith on any of my teams, no DCs, and though he would have been a perfect DC pick. But yeah, he's hitting 400 over the last 2 weeks. Week 12, so 2 weeks ago, was only 9 at bats. So I'm not sure if the Rangers had a short week that week or what happened. Maybe a bunch of lefties, because I think Smith is only platooning for them currently. Yep. But yeah, I mean, he's been batting third. Oh, the one lefty, he hit fifth. So yeah, he's in the heart of the lineup. They're starting to get healthy. Seager's been back for a while now. Langford's back. He's doing well. He's hitting the ball hard. So yeah, I if someone were to add Josh Smith going into this week's fab, you may be a little empty handed because of the young potential return. But other than that, I mean, Smith's playing well. The only thing still, I remember when we talked about him in the past before, the expected stats on Baseball Savant aren't the best for Smith. A lot of blue, but the contact and the plate discipline metrics are definitely the better ones. And he's fast, so he'll give you some speed. Only 4 steals of this year, so not too much, but the 303 average and 228 at bats has been nice. And it's surprising to see him up here, but like I said, the three homer week will do that for you in a short sample.
Yeah, that's a great point. The three homer week, he had four homers in the month of June. So to get three in 1 week definitely does kind of make the stats pop out a little more, one would say. And like we're talking playing time, and again, he's talented. The reason why I moved on when guys like Royce and others came back is good average is kind of dead everywhere else. Because even with the four homers, we're talking about, you know, nine runs, nine RBIs, 11 runs scored. Like in a full month, you would hope for more. Still not bad. Again, I still think he's a very good player, maybe more 15 team than a 12 team guy when normal. But you mentioned the playing time. He's been like DHing and playing third base primarily DHing, if you want to pick his main position of late. Ezekiel Duran's playing a ton. You mentioned Wyatt Langford came back. And then you have Josh Jung possibly coming back. They're going to find places for Josh Smith. But like you were saying, is how many places is enough to justify the roster spot? That's the million-dollar question. And that's kind of where you're going to have to figure it out, because you might have got his best week right now. That three-homer week might have been it. And if you can sell high, I would actually say sell high if you can. And just think there might be a bench or a dropping coming up if things cool down, because it's not much more there outside of the batting average, it feels like. All right, Bryce Harper, Shohei Ohtani, Fernando Tatis, Gunnar Henderson. Sure. Let's talk Jaron Duran for a minute. This is a guy that people were kind of, you know, he started out big. Everyone's happy about draft season. We want Jaron Duran. Then it kind of slowed down a little bit. We're back, baby. We're back. In the month of June, Duran hit .384 with four homers, 21 runs scored, and nine stolen bases. One of the big things was, like, people asked, why is he not running anymore? And, like, the story was Alex Cora told him to slow down. They didn't want him to get hurt or whatever. Well, he's running again, folks, and that's the key to Jaron Duran. So what are you seeing, Ben, when you look at a guy like Jaron Duran who had a monster month of June, and hopefully that carries over, obviously?
So the main thing that we're looking at right here is the BABIP, and a lot of the times this is what will happen when you have guys at the top of these monthly leaderboards, and Duran's BABIP in June has been .453. So, and that is associated with a .384 average. So he's definitely hitting above his talent level, but that's what happens when you get hot for small periods of time. And I won't complain because I have Jaron in a few teams. And I think after seeing how good his stats have been over the last month, 3 weeks or so, it makes sense why my one team that hasn't been shot out the standings. So I appreciate that. And yeah, seeing the steal totals is nice, because I remember hearing the Cora comment about keeping him in check with the steal attempts just to keep him healthy. But maybe they think he's healthy now and they're giving him the green light to go whenever he's going, because 4-2-3 in three consecutive weeks is awesome for his steal totals. And Duran's scoring, he's got 8, 6, 5 runs those weeks. That's huge. He even has four homers. He's doubled his homer season total in those 3 weeks. He has 7 now on the year. So that's great to see. And yeah, I was a big fan of Duran going into the drafts. And unfortunately, the price kept me from getting him, I think, in any of the main events, which was unfortunate. But I have him in DCs. And yeah, with Duran, if he can hit 300, I mean, he's fast enough to do that. I don't know if the strikeout rate will help him get there, but definitely I like what he's doing right now. And this is why I was big on Duran early in drafts.
Most definitely. He's putting up the numbers we expected. And one thing I'll say is, like, I know the BABIP is high and that should regress, but what we've seen in the last month, you know, 10.3% barrel rate, near 52% hard hit rate, 112 max EV. So he's smoking the baseball when he's getting his chance there, which is great to see. Still like a 46% ground ball rate, which also will help with the BABIP when he's hitting that well. So I agree, there's going to be coming back for sure. But when you look at the whole scheme of things, it's great to see what we're seeing from him. He's not just a, you know, slappy batting average guy that's going to steal bags. He's supporting the power as well with some very good quality contact metrics, which awesome to see. Good lineup getting going. So I like that one quite a bit.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds. Hot streak, real quick, his hot streak kind of got him back to where he should be. So his XBA is .282. Duran's out hitting .288. So he's basically back to where the skills say he should be. So that was the last thing I wanted to add.
Perfect. We got Brian Reynolds for us here. He's 11th on this list with a 195 WRC plus, hitting .350 in June with 5 homers, 1 steals. By the way, we're recorded on Monday night. He heads into Great American Small Park for 3 games. So those numbers might get a little better as well by the middle of this week. But when you're looking at Brian Reynolds, this is a guy that, you know, it's fluctuated, still hitting .275 on the year. Expectations have been high, then they kind of qualmed a bit after a slow season last year. Good month of June here. Is this a guy we should maybe start counting on? It looks like he's hitting every game in June so far. That is impressive. I just pulled up his game log. He's hitting every single game this month.
Yeah, he's such a good hitter, and this is why I was big on Reynolds last year in drafts. I think I only got him on one team this year. It was more he was going a little bit higher than he did last year, and then I was in on those pitchers and going like right before pick 100, and that's kind of where Reynolds was getting drafted. But, yeah, a little disappointing last year with the average, but the 275 is more of what I always viewed him as. His XBA on the year is 274. And, so he's kind of corrected his season-long stats with his hot streak in June. And I just wish I had him on more teams, but he's definitely helping the one that I do have him in. He's one of those definitely – he gets more, I think, more tout in 15-team leagues because of he's more of a boring profile. And I think we've talked about this in the offseason too. But it's like he's good for 12s, but you don't get too excited when you draft him. I mean, I do because I play 15s mostly. So I love taking Brian Reynolds. And it's good to see he's kind of bouncing back from a little bit of a down year, at least average-wise. And the counting stats are a little far behind for his pace from last year. Kind of, you can just double them right now. So only on pace for fewer than 70 runs, which kind of hurts. But there's time for him to get that back up to the 85 he scored last year.
Yeah, most definitely. It's been quite the run for Brian Reynolds. And I agree. Like, he's the boring guy in 12s. And that's the thing that I should probably change my mindset on, because boring's been very beautiful this year. And I usually like the boring. I guess I don't like the boring when it costs more than it usually does for boring, but Reynolds is definitely that. So I should have been more interested in him in 12s, because he would be a nice just plug and play and leave alone in outfields right now with the way things are going. So that's something to keep in mind going into next season already. It's only June. What else do we have to worry about next season? Next up here, Freddie Freeman, of course, but Carlos Santana checks in at 13th on this list. Hitting 343 in June, four homers, two steals, striking out 9.3% of the time, which I think is very impressive in this grand scheme of things. He's barreling the ball 5%, hit hard at 33, so that does not look great. But the production is there for Carlos Santana, and he plays pretty much every day for the Twins, which is a sneaky good offense with Royce Lewis back. So what's your thoughts on Carlos Santana? Because I know Bloomfield talked about him last week on our Fab show.
He's been a blind spot for me because I just don't have him anywhere. The age kind of scared me off in draft and hold season. He's 38 now, and the average hasn't been that good the past couple of years. 247, though, doesn't hurt you this year, especially with the depressed hitting environment. So I kind of wish maybe I took the dip on that ADP. I did have him last year, and I ended up playing him all the time. But I remember when Santana signed with the Twins, I was kind of unsure of where he was going to play, but they stay true to their nature, and they always get hurt. So the playing time has been there most of the year. But, it's definitely a good hot streak for Santana. He's had a homer, at least one homer the last 4 weeks. So and the average is really surprising, but the K rate is just so low. Only a couple strikeouts each of the last couple weeks. And over the period, I think you said 9.3%, which is – probably it's the second lowest besides Kwan on the at least the top 20 of the list. So that's why he's doing so well lately, for sure.
Yeah, he's a deep league guy. I've written him up a few times this year in the Fab article. And like I said, Bloomfield mentioned him last week, and it's a good call because they have a nice schedule coming up. So he's like a guy it's hard for me to lock in less than 15s with the corner infield landscape just getting deteriorated. He becomes quite interesting. And I honestly, in 12s, we'll talk about the moves later. I had a waterfall on my Rizzo picks, and he was like third or fourth on some of them because those leagues were just gutted for corner infield. So I get it. I think there's going to be some rough weeks. And if you look at the week by week logs, there's definitely be rough weeks, but he's been good more often than not, especially as a corner infield where he just kind of treads water for you, at least if not produces well. So I do like Carlos a lot. I just worry, like you said, with age, when's that going to come kind of screeching back to reality? All right, Juan Soto, you expect that. C.J. Abrams, which honestly kind of surprising with the everyone talking about how C.J. Abrams is slumping, still had a pretty darn good June, 338, three homers, three steals. Riley Green, he's got five homers in the month, hitting 320. Anthony Santander, I've mentioned him a few times, and 11 home runs this month, hitting 284, which is great. The guy I want to talk about, Ben, is Jackson Merrill. He has a 182 WRC plus in the month, which is tied for 17th with Anthony Santander. He's 18th on the list. Seven homers, two steals, hitting 312, striking out 18.3%. Merrill's the guy that I'm like, everyone knows me in draft season. I'm probably not drafting a rookie anyways. And Merrill felt like, yeah, I don't know. I didn't see anything that really caught my attention. Again, not good with rookies, so my flaw. Slow start to the season for Jackson Merrill. But my goodness, talk about a month of June, Ben. Probably the best month he'll have all year. Hitting 7 home runs is pretty dang impressive. And he did most of that damage over like the last 2 weeks or 10 days. But what's your thoughts when you look at Jackson Merrill? Because the price will never be high enough right now.
No, for sure. And who would have thought that he would have been the best Jackson of the rookie class going into the season?
Well done. Well done.
Yeah. Jackson Holiday and Turi Arndt, they wish they could be having the year that he's having right now. But so if you double Merrill's year-to-date stats, you're looking at 70 runs, 20 homers, 70 RBI, and 18 steals. So basically 20-20 with a 290 average, assuming he can relatively keep this up. I mean, like, yeah, you mentioned he's been out, like, unbelievably hot the last 2 weeks with the power department. And that's kind of one of the worries I had. I know other guys have said this on podcasts, but it's more of him being a better real-life player than a fantasy player. But this past week has maybe changed my opinion on that. I did take Merrill in a couple of DCs, I think, once the talk came out later in draft season where he might make the Padres. So I kind of prioritized him ahead of other rookies that were probably more like a midseason call-up. So I missed out like one of the first homers and I started playing Merrill. So I've got most of the production definitely the last week. So that's been nice. And the dual eligibility is great. He's an outfield shortstop. And so looking at the Statcast too, there's a lot of red. So I think the power is at least playable, especially even in 12s, because his barrel rate is 58% on the year, 8.6% or 58th percentile, excuse me. His sprint speed is 82nd percentile. His XBA is 298, 95th percentile, which I haven't looked into him this closely because I can't, like, he's not available in Fab leagues for me. So I haven't had to. It's just he's been playing well. So I'm starting him in my DCs. And so he seems like he's legit. He's only 21, which is kind of crazy. He's playing a new position since day one. And I'm curious to see what his final stat line will be because, I mean, he has a chance to go 20-20 as a rookie and help with the average. And he's playing every day for the Padres. They have a decent lineup. So he's projected for good runs and RBIs for the rest of the year too. And I think he'll be a great draft day bargain.
Yeah, I've thoroughly missed this one. Again, like I would expect to miss with these prospects, but he's been doing much more. Like you said, I haven't really looked into him a ton because he's never been available for me. He's pretty much drafted everywhere. But it's darn impressive to see him on this list and see where it goes. So pretty, pretty strong stuff there. As we go down the list here, some other fun names. You know, J.D. Martinez is heating up, which I was telling, I think, Kirtland even last week, or maybe it was Bloomfield last week, that, well, yeah, he missed all of spring and he started in AAA. Like, he's probably finally healthy and confident. So I got that going. And then if you go down a little farther, you got Elliot Ramos. I won't bug people enough on that one. That's been pretty much beaten to death. And regression will come, but at the same time, still playing pretty darn good. I want to ask you about Carlos Correa, though. This is a guy I know I bash on many times for his health, and many other people's have. But right now, Carlos Correa is healthy. And in the month of June, he's 21st on this list, 177 WRC+, hit .383 in the month of June, 4 home runs, 17 ribbies, striking out less than 16%. Like, these are all things we love to see when it comes to Correa. You know, 9% barrel rate, but 51% hard hit rate. You know, that's not bad either. But again, he's healthy right now. So this is pretty, pretty good stuff. So when you look at Carlos Correa, again, there's probably a time to trade him if you can, because he's AKA healthy and playing well. But is this something, you know, minus the normal regression you expect to see, something we might, you know, enjoy the rest of the year?
Yeah, I think he's definitely a case of the positive regression that we've been trying to not forget about lately on Twitter. And because his stat cast is all red. And Correa had the injury last year, or was he coming off the injury? I forget exactly.
He's had an injury every year, but
That's a dumb question. I don't know why I asked.
I know what you're saying. The last year he had that big one that kept him out for a while.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I'm looking on his stat cast. He has 580 play appearances last year, but he had 230. So maybe it was like a nagging injury where he was playing through it or something.
I think they said he was dealing with it for a while. And he finally hit the aisle at some point.
Yeah. So maybe it cut his season early. It was something happening. And yeah, but before that, he hit .291. And so the 304 average year to date is awesome, especially with average being so low right now. And yeah, but in the trading league, like you said, if you don't trust Correa to stay healthy, then I get trying to move him. I'm sure someone's going to be itching to acquire a 300 hitting shortstop because they don't come by too easily. And yeah, I mean, he's basically doing what we always hoped he would do. It's just that, like we've said, Correa never stayed healthy. And he's really putting it together right now to have a good year. He's the power isn't probably where we'd like it to be, only 8 homers on the year, but the runs and RBIs and the average are really good. And of course, no steals like usual, but I mean, that's what you expect with Correa.
Yeah. He was the joke I would always make in draft prep is he's the poor man's Xander Bogaerts, because Bogaerts always went higher. They both went healthy, hit for average and a little bit of pop and no steals. Like, it just felt like they're the Spider-Man gif going picks apart. So that's what you're getting from Correa right now. Like you mentioned in previous years, he's a batting average dude that hits power. Like, there's no doubt. And that offense, when healthy, will score a ton of runs. So he should drive in plenty. It's just a matter of, can he stay healthy? And we're crossing our fingers he can, because that'll benefit Royce Lewis and Willie Castro, and maybe Ryan Jeffers wakes up someday. There's a lot of bats in that lineup that could benefit from a healthy Carlos Correa sitting in the middle of it. So I'm with you on that. After this one, you have Schwarber and then Heimer Candelario. This is one I wanted to talk about. Hitting 333 in June, 8 homers, 3 steals, 18 RBIs. Doesn't walk a ton, but I've paid close attention to this because I have a lot of Heimer Candelario. He's hit safely in all but 2 games this month. 3 stolen bases stands out to me in a big way. His forearm elbow was injured a lot earlier this year. It seems healthy with the 8 home runs. Does play a great American, which is a plus, but when I'm getting steals and this pop from Heimer, I'm pretty excited about it. I was all in on him this season because what I saw last year, I was all in on him last year too. I believed in it, especially going to Cincinnati, but it was a rough start to say the least, but this month of June's promising. What's your thoughts when you see it? Because obviously I don't think he's going to be an 8 home run every month guy, but I'm thinking like 275-ish guy that hits 5 home runs is very much in the cards.
No, yeah. So I don't have Heimer. I remember how much you loved him, so I'll give you props for being correct on that call so far. And I remember, he actually had a little bit of a Chris Davis syndrome. He hit 182 the first 3 weeks of the year. Yep. So I remember Heimer started out slow. But so this is one of the reasons why I wasn't too aggressive, even though he wasn't too expensive in drafts. And his Statcast is, there's a lot of blue still. So his XBA is 237, but he's hitting 254. That's a fine range for that. But they're like, the hard hit percentage is only 20th percentile. The ex-woba is 304. And I want to see what his expected homers are based on ballpark. So he has 14 homers, and with the Reds, where's Cincinnati? 16. So if he's played in like Chicago, he only has 7 homers. So I wonder how much the ballpark is helping him to beat these expected stats right now. But I mean, he's averaging over a homer a week since like week 4, because he had 1 every week, and then he's at 3-3-2 the last 3 weeks. So yeah, Heimer's paying off in a big way. He's on pace for almost 30 homers. He has 14 on the year. Even some speed, he has 3 steals, which is nice. And yeah, he might be like I said before, the Statcast wasn't the best last year, so I didn't know how much to bank on it repeating. But going to Cincinnati definitely seems to have helped him so far this year. And I don't think he's going to be traded anytime soon, so I don't see why this wouldn't not continue going forward.
Yeah, benefiting from that quite a bit. So crossing my fingers that we see. And again, I'm expecting downs, but I'm not expecting the downs from the first 3 weeks like you talked about. That was like, and then he just got hurt and it kind of all checked out. He got healthy. And I think we'll at least have a good run to finish the year, and he'll be very, very serviceable. First base, third base helps a ton. So that corner infield we've been talking about.
I'd take him right now for that reason.
Yep, it's just so easy to plug and play right now. Bregman's next. He's actually playing sneaky good. People need to realize that. Marcelo Zuna is just a beast. I want to talk about Tyler Soderstrom. We kind of talked about him off air in a tongue-in-cheek thing, which we'll discuss later in the show. But Soderstrom's a guy that, you know, high expectations last year. Came up when Gelof came up. Gelof outperformed him, even though everyone wanted to get Soderstrom. He's first base only now, and not just util only. He hit 288 in June with 5 home runs. And to me, like, you know, 22.4% K rate is very doable for what we're seeing there from Soderstrom. And that barrel and hard hit rate, man, 18% barrel, almost 60% hard hit rate. Dude mashes the ball when he makes contact. Now, there's probably holes in the swing still, because it's hard for me to see the improvements that quick, but he's young. You never know. So when you see Tyler Soderstrom have this kind of month, what are we thinking? Because, like, we talked off air, what I really think his capabilities are, 288's above that.
Yeah, I think his power is pretty legit. As seen by the 4 homer week he had, that kind of, I think, well, he was already added at that point, but people were like, oh wow, if he's still available, I better go get him. And he's only 22, and he's been playing every day for the A's. He's he even started against the last lefty, and I was thinking Soderstrom was at righty, because of, I know Rooker's a righty, some of their power hitters are righty, so I was thinking Soderstrom was the same way. Like, I think Langelier is a righty. I kind of get those two mixed up. They're almost like the same player to me. Yep. And but yeah, the all the power metrics are, if he qualified, they would be high percentiles on Baseball Savant. And even with the 30% strikeout rate on the year, Soderstrom's XBA is 246. So that's not going to hurt you, but he has to keep hitting the ball as hard as he does for that to stay that high. And it's kind of in line with his actual average on the year. But the good thing though in June was his K rate is only 22%. So I don't know if that's a small sample or he did something to improve that, because he still hit the five homers, which is, if you can strike out that low of a percentage and then hit five homers per month, he's going to be a steal off the waiver wire. But
yeah, that's what I'm saying. The strikeout rate shocked me. And I'm like, He's young, so maybe he made adjustments, but that's a quick adjustment in the column. That's tough. Like, did he go to the Matt Olson school in Oakland where he learned how to strike out less and hit for power still? That'd be cool. But we'll see. Like, he's 22. That's like, I'm going to temper my expectations and just be happy with whatever comes my direction type thing. But it's been pretty sweet so far. Rounding out the top 30 here, you got Brandon Nimmo, who's just been – the power has been shocking me, Ben. Four home runs. That's been big. Rosarena's waking up, hitting 295, two homers and three steals, not striking out a ton. That's been glorious. Jesse Winker's on this list. And then Will Brennan's down here. Didn't know if we need to talk about Will, but we can. 333 average, three homers, 10% K or 9% K, 9% walk. Any of those guys reach out to you? Otherwise, I'm going to flip to the next page and have a little fun with a few guys.
Well, for most of the audience, Will Brennan isn't really relevant in a 12-teamer, just a streamer when there's a heavy right-handed schedule for the Guardians. But, yeah, I was hoping you'd touch on Rainey, because I have him on one of my main events, and I'm very happy with how he's been doing lately. So hopefully he keeps it up, because that average is really dragging on my team average.
Well, it was the running joke. Like, he's going to hit below 200 and hit 20-20. Well, he's still hitting .193, 10 homers and 10 steals right now. But, yeah, that that month has been quite nice. Like, if you just go month by month with Randy, it's definitely a marked improvement for Mr. Randy Rosarena. So, like, there he is. Let's just hope this stays, is all I'm trying to say, because it's been brutal, as you mentioned. And like, yeah, March, April, 143, May, 178, June, 295. So let's hope we see that trend going forward. We might get like a 245 hitter by the end with like 25 and 25. I think we could live in that world with very happily with Randy Rosarena.
For sure. His XBA, his projected average probably like 250 anyway, so that's not far off.
I would take that right now. Just for fun, before we get into the most added players over the weekend, like Ketel Marte is 31st. Connor Juan still checking out at 32nd. He's on paternity leave right now, so kudos to him and his wife. Giancarlo Stanton hits the IL for a month. Jose Miranda keeps balling out. Just want to highlight that. I wanted to see what your thoughts were on Andrew Vaughn. He's 35th on this list, 158 WRC+. 342 average in June, five home runs. I've written him up in a few places because he just continues to get it done. And more importantly, elevating the ball and pulling the ball while he elevates the ball. Obviously, what is the recipe for power. We talk about that many times. He's doing that now, and he has never really done that in his entire career. So Andrew Vaughn has definitely made adjustments to become a much better ball player. What do you think when you see a guy like Andrew Vaughn?
I hope if you drafted Andrew Vaughn, you held on to Andrew Vaughn, because you're probably very upset if you dropped him and then were unable to acquire him back, because he was worthy of a drop, especially in 12s. I mean, I held on to him in 15s just because of the nature of a 15-team league. But, yeah, so he's kind of getting back to why I drafted him, or I was big on drafting Vaughn where he was going. I remember we talked about him in one of the projection podcasts we did about how boring he is and how on the nose he usually is with his projections. But because he started off so bad, like the runs, 26 runs is pretty poor halfway through the year. But I mean, there's time for that. Like, if he goes at this pace going forward, it's going to outdo the 60 runs he's projected for. But the thing is with the White Sox, they're just so bad. I guess you kind of hope that he gets traded, because he's probably one of the better trade pieces that they have. He's 26. You probably want someone younger for the future. And teams might see his prospect pedigree and be like, okay, this guy's made the adjustment, like you mentioned, with the pulling the fly balls, which it'll help his power play up, because he doesn't have the best power metrics, but his barrel rate's solid. It's 8.9%, which is a few points above average. And so I'm still rolling Vaughn out there every week in my 15s, and just hope he continues his hot streak.
Yep, 100% with you on that one. A lot of people, I think all three of my 12s, Vaughn was dropped. So I'm like, yeah, it was a very common thing, and honestly kind of checked out there for a while. It made sense in those kind of formats, but man, this is what happens from time to time. Last guy I want to ask you about here. First, we'll skip over Jorge Soler, who is actually putting together quite the month of June, all things considered. Yainer Diaz is heating up. Adley Rutschman's just awesome. I messed up on that one. Austin Riley's warming up. I wanted to ask you about number 40 on this list, Alec Burleson, hitting 289 in the month, 7 homers, 17 runs, 14 RBIs, 3 steals, striking out less than 14%, hitting second every day for the Cardinals. Some might call him Alec Burleson. What are you thinking when we see this? Because 11% barrel, 42% hard hit rate in the month of June. And he's just continues to produce right now, either scoring runs or driving them in like crazy. And then he had all three of his stolen bases came in the last two games versus the Giants, by the way, because the Giants are great at that. So what's your thoughts on this one?
I wish I prioritized Burleson more in the bid list that where I had him when he was available. Like, there were times where I just needed a bat or an outfielder, and I had him for like $2 in the, near the middle or the bottom of my list. And I kind of wish I had him on some teams, but yeah, I remember, I think it was the RotoWire pod with Jeff and Scott. They were talking about him and what's going to happen with all these guys coming back from injury. Like, Edmund might be back. Lars will be back. Yep. They have a pretty steady lineup right now, the Cardinals, but they have all these people coming back who are typically starters for them. And I think the way Burleson's playing, they can't sit him. He's one of the younger players. He's a decent prospect, I believe. And he's in 285, so that's awesome. That's tough to find right now in fantasy. And the steals is funny because he has 12th percentile sprint speed. And I think you and Michael C. or someone were talking in the chat about how the Giants are with base runners. But yeah, the 13% strikeout rate for Burleson in June is awesome. Only walk 3% of the time, but that's good for fantasy because that means he's helping your average that much more with all those at-bats. You don't want people to walk a lot if you want average help, as long as they have a good average, that is. And yeah, the power metrics are pretty solid. I remember when he got called up, I was a little worried if Burleson would hit for power, but he's an X-slug of 470. The barrel rate's a little bit below average, but he hits the ball hard above average. So maybe that could correct eventually, one way or the other. And yeah, I think he's got to play moving forward for the Cardinals if they want to compete.
Yep, I'm 100% with you on that one. It's good. Lupar is trying to, he's taking BP. Edmund's taking BP. So I think they're a little ways away and they keep having setbacks. So I think water will find its level type situation there, but time will tell as well. All right, we can keep going on this list for a while, but let's talk about some the most common or popular ads of the week on the NFBC OC, the 12-team league, as we like to do. It leads to a lot of interesting conversation besides just me going, wow, how did he go for this much and this much? That's always a laughing point and will always be one on this show as it just shows up right out the gate on the first one here. But let's start with the most added player in NFBC OCs in 184 leagues. Because David Bednar went on the IL late on Sunday. Aroldis Chapman was added 184 leagues, as high as 158, as low as a dollar. I understood going to try to add Aroldis Chapman. That made sense. Okay. Just remember, he also has an ERA of 4. When you look at Aroldis Chapman, he has a K to walk of 14.5, not the guy you once knew, and a Sierra of 4.23, so not a fluke in the runs department. Given he should be the closer initially. I've always been a Holderman fan. I put him into my DCs this week, thinking maybe he'll get lucky. It seems like Chapman's the guy, Ben, but were you in on this situation, or were you just like, you know what, I'll let other people throw money at this?
Yeah, I didn't want Chapman. Well, I didn't really need Chapman. So I have my one-man event where I have Hector Neris as my RP, I guess, 2 now. But as long as he's the closer still, I'm not going to drop this much fab on a potentially short-term replacement. I hope the people who bid that much have Bednar because, I mean, that makes more sense because it's a simple one-for-one. You're keeping your stream of saves, hopefully. But so while you were talking, I pulled up Chapman's fan graphs, and his walk rate on the year is 21.8%. That's just unbelievable. And even as a reliever, you can't survive walking that many people. I mean, it's always been mostly above 10% for his career, but 21.8 is just ridiculous. And yeah, this could end up getting really ugly for whoever added Chapman. But I mean, if you need saves, you need saves. So I get it. And there haven't been too many replacements for saves so far this year. And yeah, I mean, it could be messy. I'll say that.
Yeah, that was my thoughts. Like, I was not desperately in need of saves. Even the teams I had Bednar on, I had at least one other guy. So I had two going. Still, I had like 3 closers on most teams. I'm like, I'll just tough it out with 2 for now until Bednar comes back. Because the reports before the 7 o'clock my time, 10 Eastern fab went off was it was a mild strain. They expect him back after 10 games. Again, a lot can change, but I'll take my chances there instead of breaking the bank on Aroldis Chapman. And again, like even Uncle Ted's, like I like Holderman a lot. I think he'll get more chances than people think. So if I were to get one, that's who I should have went for, but I was not really in the market either direction. Ben Rice, this one we knew would be popular. Picked up in 159 leagues, 150 max, $1 minimum. It helps. He's playing first base for the Yanks, but he's catcher eligible. Like he'll be first base eligible by the end of this week. He's filling in. Well, maybe not, actually. He's filling in for Anthony Rizzo right now. Hit 294 on the week with one run and one RBI, so five singles. Walked a decent amount. We saw the power. We saw the speed in the minors. They did trade for JD Davis, so this could turn into a platoon potentially situation. We'll see. But what's your thoughts on Ben Rice? Because we knew he'd be popular, and they did not disappoint.
No, for sure. I had a few bids in for Ben Rice. I lost Luis Campusano in a league, and then I also had Miguel Amaya, and I was looking to upgrade that. And so Rice was a perfect replacement, I thought. I don't think I got Rice because people were more aggressive than I was. And so one of the things that's awesome is that the Yankees have faced four lefty starters in the last five games. Yep. And Ben's started three of the four. So that's an awesome sign, even though he was projected for a platoon, probably with Oswaldo Cabrera and DJ LeMahieu switching around. But now with JD back, like you mentioned, JD Davis on the team, there's a chance that it's more of a strict platoon for Rice. But, I mean, he's 25. He's a big prospect for them. They might just want to see how he does against lefties. And so far, his overall stats haven't been hurt by that playing in time. He has 294 average. He has as many walks as strikeouts, three apiece. And that's awesome, especially for someone their first time around and with the lefty-on-lefty matchups all the time, like I mentioned. So hopefully he's up for the rest of the year. I'm sure he could be better than what Rizzo was. And I get the ad. Having the full-time playing time for a catcher when they're not a catcher is nice. Less injury risk. And kind of wish I got Rice, but I had to be a little frugal with my money this week, so I didn't get him anywhere.
That's kind of how it was. Like I should have been more aggressive in certain spots potentially, but I was saving my cash for some other stuff that we'll talk about later this show and later this season. Spencer Turnbull was picked up in 151 leagues, as high as 65, as low as a dollar, with Taiwan Walker hitting the IL. Spencer Turnbull should go back into the Phillies rotation. Should be in line for it's a blister. Should get at least two starts, it looks like, for now. We'll have to kind of wait and see on that. Turnbull hasn't made a start since April 30th, so it's basically almost 2 months with no starts. And he's been mediocre at best out of the bullpen. He was great as a starter. We know the story. We know how it went down. So what was your interest in a guy like Turnbull? Because to me, again, there was guys I saw more of a long-term plan for that kind of took Turnbull off the table for me.
And he was available on a couple of 15s for me, so I was a little more aggressive because there's not many pitchers of that upside available. But I didn't get Turnbull anywhere. The matchup with the Tigers was really appealing once I got announced. And I mean, depending on how Turnbull does, he's going to be better than Taiwan Walker probably, because Walker wasn't very good. But the way teams work, they pay these guys to be starters, and they kind of want to – at least, well, Turnbull's shown he's flexible being able to come out of the bullpen, so it would make sense from that perspective of him going back to the bullpen. But it's – I don't know. So I was more aggressive than I probably should have been with bidding more than I wanted to pay or spend this week in my teams that are low in FAB. But Turnbull showed that he could pitch well when he was a start out the year. And I thought, at least for this stream, it was a good matchup. And there's a chance that he could stick in the rotation going forward. But yep. I get your concerns, though.
If he sticks, it makes me look like a fool, which happens pretty regularly. So that's fine, because he is 100% better than Walker. He should never have left the rotation for Walker. Walker got paid, so I get it. It all is how baseball works. But we'll see how it goes. And the Tiger start is darn juicy. So could be an option. Like, here's the guy that I was interested in, Spencer Schwellenbach. Picked up in 142 leagues, as high as 73, as low as a dollar. I was like not all in, like somewhere, as we looked at this. And honestly, as high as 73, I thought he'd go a little higher with the two-step this week. We'll see how that goes by the time we finish loading this up. We might have an idea. But when you look at Schwellenbach, he's made four starts, three out of four, three in runs or less, which is outstanding. But a 498 ERA, like a 417 Sierra, 19 Ks and 21 2/3, given most of the damage came in one start. what's your thoughts when you look at a guy like Spencer Schwellenbach? Because the Braves have been trying everybody they can to fill this rotation, and no one's coming through. And he's trying to lock down a spot finally. And right now he has a better hold on it than other people did.
Yeah, I think he's stuck around a lot longer than most have. And I don't know what really why they like him more than maybe like Hurston Waldrop. Maybe he's just more ready in his progression, Schwellenbach is. But the matchup, at least I could see why he was added so heavily in the 12-teamers, because it's St. Louis and Pittsburgh. That's a really good two-step, especially with the Braves behind you. So there's a good chance for two wins. And he's pitching deep into game, six innings out the last two games, one against the Orioles, where he kind of held his own, only up two runs in that game. And then he kind of beat up on the Tigers, which is expected because of the Tigers. So I get it. I wasn't able to add Schwellenbach anywhere. I think he was pretty much scooped up after that first start. People saw the Braves and they wanted the win potential in the main event in the OLAC format. But yeah, I would sign off on this two step all the way.
Yeah, no, it's I was much more, I'll have to double check. I don't know if I got him or not. We'll talk about that in a bit, but much more interested in a guy like Schwellenbach this week, because feels weird that he might actually stick with this team, all things considered. All right, let's highlight once again, you mentioned it with Ben Rice, the catching position has been a conundrum in baseball. So even a part-time catcher received 129 bids this week in Freddie Fermin, as high as $30, as low as $1. He's sitting on Monday for the second straight day. Just keep that in mind. And two out of the three starts before that, he DH'd. So Michael Massey came back on Monday. Hunter Renfroe came back on Monday. A lot of moving parts there in Kansas City. I love Freddie Fermin. I also liked Ivan Herrera. That worked for a little bit. I like Bo Naylor. Worked for like nothing this year. I thought Fermin was a guy, if he got at bats, would be fun. 51 plate appearances in June at 271 with three homers. Two of those homers came 3 games ago. So the tools are there with Fermin. It's just been playing time. And just by the looks of things already, I'm wondering if the playing time justifies the pickup this week. Could be wrong. What's your thoughts on Freddie Fermin?
I have Fermin in a DC, and first set my lineup, I was ready to start him this week because I think I had, Ryan Jeffers was someone who's been struggling lately. I said, might as well ride the hot hand. But then I saw he was sitting. I'm like, well, that's not a good sign. But then I went to the Royals lineup and I saw Massey's back. I go, so that could be an issue. But looking at the lineup, so Michael Garcia is playing second, which is interesting tonight. Yep. And they called up CJ Alexander, a 28-year-old, almost 28, from AAA, I'm assuming. And I don't know why he's up.
He's playing very well at AAA.
He? Okay.
Yeah, I think it sounds like they want to mix things up. Like I'll pull up his page real quick. We can have a little discussion here, because this looks like this might be a thing with the Royals going forward. CJ Alexander, there we go. He's making his debut on Thursday, like you mentioned, playing third base. And when you dig in deeper, this year at AAA, 56 games, .323 average, 9 homers, 16 doubles if you want that, couple steals, 42 runs, like nothing crazy, but only a 24% K rate, which you'll take these days, .923 OPS. He's playing pretty good there, and that offense needs a spark, so I could see the appeal.
Okay, interesting. Seeing Garcia playing second is very interesting, but with Massey back, then, well, he's normally the second baseman, so that it would be Massey at second, Michael at third, and then the DH is available, presumably, and that's where Fermin would come into play. But if they want to play the CJ Alexander guy, then it's going to be playing time's going to be tough for Fermin, even that he's playing so well. I know he was a popular DC pick because people, I think when he replaced Perez last year, he did pretty well, and people got excited that they could split time, and it was kind of working. Or even that Perez is old now, so he would maybe get hurt. But yeah, so definitely it kind of stinks if someone overpaid for Fermin this week, because I don't know how much he's going to play now. But definitely a situation to monitor if you have Fermin, or if you're thinking about adding him.
And this Alexander thing might just be a little trial, see how it goes. Fermin will have his value off and on throughout the season. I'm still pretty gung-ho on that. I love Michael Massey, but the dude's been injured twice in like the last month and a half. One of them was a back injury. So keep your eye on that situation. There's going to be an opportunity for things. The worst thing is, like, we're already talking for me, the backup catcher. Nelson Velasquez is starting to get pretty much ready to go back to AAA, it feels like, because he's not playing much at all. That's been a big detriment to the Royals situation here. So there's a lot of moving parts, as you mentioned, with Fermin. But, yeah, like Nelson, there's CJ Alexander that got in here. at third base, I pulled up the roster resource just to kind of get another feel of what they're doing. Did Nelson Velasquez go back to AAA? Yeah, he got sent to AAA in this deal. Alexander must have come up for Velasquez. Well, that answers my question. I said he was close to going back. There you go. I haven't done my news for the day yet, so I didn't know. But that checks out, folks. There's your answer on that one. Nelly's back to AAA. That's a big surprise on a Monday after Fab takes place. All right, Chad Green picked up in 115 leagues, as high as 122, as low as a dollar. Everyone thought Nate Pearson would be the guy. I still think he's the better guy. We'll see. But Chad Green was named the closer when the Jimmy Garcia injury went down. Jordan Romano got shut down in his throwing program again. Like, I think he's just done for the year personally. Like, they need to get that fixed. I will say this much, though. Chad Green still doesn't have a save this season. They got that going for him. And Jimmy Garcia started his throwing program again, so he's probably 10 to 14 days away. So you're paying for maybe 2-3 weeks of Chad Green here. What was your thoughts on this one?
Same thing kind of applies with what I said for Chapman. I didn't need a closer immediately right now, so I wasn't in on the bidding for Green. But, the Jimmy Garcia news makes me wonder how much or how wise it was to spend big on Green. But he's been hurt a couple times too, Garcia.
Yeah, he just started his throwing. Let's see how he keeps progressing. So you're fine there.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. So Green's underlying metrics they're okay. He has a low K rate. The estimators are fine, but not the best for a reliever. They're in the threes, and his FIPs and roughly 4.5, so that's not good. Green's had his share of injuries in the past too. His swing strike rate is 11.8%, which is down a lot from his career, not very good for a reliever. So I don't know. It's just more of like a warm body situation with trying to get some saves. But depending on what happens with Jimmy Garcia, Green's time may be short lived. But I haven't looked into Pearson too much either because of the same reasons I've said. So I mean, he was a big prospect too, and he throws hard. So I could see him being a closer potentially.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of moving parts there. I would have rather had Green than Aroldis Chapman, if that helps clear things up at all. But I really wasn't interested in either one, just kind of like you said. This one was fun. When we recap Fab, Tobias Myers went for all kinds of weird money in certain leagues and nothing for others. This was a roller coaster here. Tobias Myers was added in 90 leagues, as high as 89, as low as a dollar. I know I had bids in on him everywhere. I don't think I got much. We'll see. But over the last four starts, his four starts in June for Tobias, one of them was on Sunday. Tobias has thrown 25 and a third innings, 2 earned runs total, 18 strikeouts. He's got 4 wins in the four starts. Now you see the 0.71 ERA and go, yeah, there's no chance. Okay, he does have a 4.16 Sierra. So if you need to take a step back on that, you can. 13.2% K to walk. But bottom line, he's getting the job done at San Diego, at the Angels, Toronto, at Detroit. So maybe 2 good teams out of the 4, but still, 4 wins in 4 starts. We talk about how hard wins are to get. Tobias is doing it. He just scares me because he's not like overpowering. He only goes 5 or 6 innings, and it's just kind of a, when's this bomb going to go off? But good 2-step last week.
Yeah. This week, who's he at? He has the Cubs, who they're okay. I mean, they're kind of struggling. Nice, yeah. But I mean, I could see them exploding for a big run total. With Myers, you mentioned the Sierra and the others, the XFIP and the XERA are right in the same range, slightly above 4. One thing, he has a high left on base rate for the year, 85.8%. So been fortunate with leaving base runners on. The BABIP is only 246. It's also kind of low. So if those two numbers correct, go more towards the median or the median mean, whatever you want to say, I think could be a little ugly for Myers. He is a former, my article is called Streamer Tidbits. He was on there when he first got called up or close to it. So good to see him doing well now. So maybe I know what I'm talking about sometimes.
know what you're talking about more often than not.
Yeah. So just be cautious. I mean, he's kind of like a Michael Lorenzen type profile, I think. Low strikeouts and just kind of skating by. But I wouldn't start to Myers in every matchup for sure in the right spots. I'd start him if I needed to. But yeah, he's been scooped up in 15, so it's good to see 12s kind of get on the bus.
Yep, no, there is, he's a popular ad. I just want to say I think he's good. Just know there's going to be a bomb here or there. Like it's coming. It feels like, I don't know, it's not the same right now, but there's a lot of like Brian Bello feeling to him for me, where he's not overpowering, does this and that, and yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I could be totally just angry because I have so much Brian Baio. next up on this list, Joey Loperfido. These are the guys I like. Prospects that crashed and burned the first time and come on back, my friends. Loperfido was added in 84 leagues, as high as 99, as low as a buck. Played in all three games over the weekend for the Astros in the outfield, all three games. Hit 4 for 10, 2 doubles, 2 ribbies, a stolen base. Still struck out over 36%. That's like the thing that struggled for a while there that kind of kept me cautious with him. But I was much more interested this time around if the price was right. What were your thoughts on Loperfido, who I thought he might get more first base run with the situation there, but I guess with Kyle Tucker still out, he got the outfield run.
Yeah, I had bids in for Loperfido. I didn't have him prioritized over the people I ended up getting, which is fine. I remember looking at his Statcast, and he doesn't have a barrel yet this year in 54 plate appearances. That kind of concerned me a little bit. I want a little power because I was trying to get off of the like the Wensel Perez types and Eddie Rosario's, who are kind of like black holes right now. One thing about Loperfido, though, he has his first base, right? I believe. I think it's only outfield. Yeah, so if he gets first base, he has speed, which would be nice. But it depends on how the Astros want to throw him out there. And so I like Loperfido. I think I'm surprised he went for this high in the OCs. You could have got him cheaper in the main event. I don't think he went for nearly as high, but I didn't get him, so I'm not sure. But I think there were competitive bids, and it was definitely reasonable if you wanted to try to get him. And so he's a platoon bat for now, it seems like. But they have a lot of righties projected in the lineup right now and not many on the bench. So I don't know who would replace him against a lefty per se, but I think the playing time is good for now. And I don't know who would, well, yeah, it'll be tricky when Tucker's back, yep. But Mauricio Dubon's been playing first. I don't see why they would play him over Loperfido. So I think he's fine going forward.
So do I. I think he's going to get some run here. I'm willing to take some chances there and see where it goes. Another former failed prospect getting a second chance is Tyler Black. He was picked up in 81 leagues, as high as 58, as low as a dollar. Since Black was recalled on June 20th, he's been a regular in the lineup, not played on Monday, weirdly enough, but played 4 straight games, hit safely in the last 2. So 3 hits, he even got a stolen base, walking over 21% in the small sample. We know the speed's there. We know a little bit of power, decent average. Somehow Monasterio starting over him on Thursday against Michael Lorenzen. That's a bummer, and we'll talk more why I think that later. But I was interested in Tyler Black, A, corner infield. Talked about that enough on the show, but what's your thought there?
I got Black on 1 or 2 teams. So I the one main event, I didn't have a backup third baseman for weeks, so it was finally nice to get someone who played third base on my bench. And I was ready to play Black until until he was sitting, and I go, well, there's a lefty tomorrow. They only have a 3-game week, so I didn't start him, which is kind of unfortunate. But he's more of like a security blanket for he should be playing over Jake Berger probably, but that's not the point of this discussion. So I like the speed. He's got a steal every week he's been up so far for Black, and that's pretty valuable from the corner. And like we said with other players countless times, third base is tough to fill. And hopefully he stays up this time and they don't go back to Jake Bowers, because Jake Bowers isn't good.
Yep, I'm with you. I'm with you on that one. I got a lot of Tyler Black. We will definitely discuss that in a bit here. So I don't have backups, because I already mentioned how screwed I was when Rizzo went down at corner field. Like, him not playing against Lorenzen, not cool at all. Like, what are we doing here? But that's a whole other rant for another time here. A couple more here we'll peek at. Jake McCarthy picked up in 78 leagues, as high as 52, as low as a dollar. McCarthy's been getting a lot of playing time of late in the outfield, which has been great. Hitting .321 in June with 7 steals. That's what he brings to the table, is that speed, average, scores some runs in a pretty good offense. There's been some issues with rehabbing for other players in the minor leagues, which probably locks McCarthy into longer-term stuff here. Plus a pretty nice schedule coming out against 4 or 5 righties this week. So what's your thoughts on Jake McCarthy? It feels like he should have been added before this, but I think people finally realize with the setbacks in the rehab that it's time to let McCarthy run wild.
It's funny. I've had McCarthy in my one main event for at least a month. He's been a staple in my team, especially in righty heavy half weeks.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so I think Kirlin actually brought this to my attention originally, but he's playing against lefties now. He was always like a platoon guy, and then he would not even play against all righties. So it's good to see McCarthy getting extra playing time. I've been worried, though, so much about Alec Thomas, who you kind of alluded to coming back, because they seem to prefer Thomas's defense. But the way it is right now, they have Carroll in center field. McCarthy's playing right, and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is playing left. Their DH is Jock, he's not leaving the lineup. He's been great. And so hopefully, well, I don't want Thomas to stay hurt, but hopefully he stays in the minors. Or if he does come back and they want to play him, that McCarthy gets traded. Because I think the Phillies were a team that may be in play for trading for him. I think it has to do with Brandon Marsh's defense maybe or something. But yeah, I've been loving McCarthy. Good average. Hasn't been stealing like he did when he first came up that 1 year, and he was a big Fab pickup. So hopefully he can kind of turn that on a little bit as long as he keeps playing. But he's been a staple in my one main event, and hopefully I can keep playing him for a while.
Yep, I'm 100% with you on that one. That was a fun one to see there. I'm gonna do the old fun. Who got the most money this week? Mookie Betts was dropped in one league somehow. I guess because people didn't want to hold him for 2 months. $381 to get Mookie Betts back. That's probably worth it. And we'll see. About 1 month of bets. Do you think 1 month of bets potentially was worth $381?
That's so much fab. I guess if you haven't spent your fab and he's your only injury, but I don't know. That's a team like that exists right now.
Yeah, that's kind of been my conundrum. Like, to me, I understood that. No, he's not a drop thing. I get it. But when you're talking about 2/3 of the season to go here and you're trying to contend and you need to have room for him for one, and to spend that kind of bringing it back to have him sit for another month and a half to 2 months is tough.
Yeah. You have to be running pure. You have to be in first place. You have to have a lot of fab you can afford to spend, or maybe you just trust yourself to work with $2 bids the rest of the way. I mean, you can do that in an OC, but it's not fun. I'm sure.
Yeah. Michael Harris was added in 9 leagues as high as 289. It's another one that he's supposed to be a month. We'll see. Lourdes Gurriel was somehow added in the league for 265. Dansby Swanson, Wyatt Langford, Jordan Montgomery, we'll get back to him later. It was picked up in 23 leagues, as high as 201, as low as $5. Makes me feel real good about life, and I'll explain why shortly. Zach Geloff added in 13 leagues, as high as 185. Bailey Ober added in a league. So the reason I do this a little exercise at the end of every fab period is check your wire, folks. It's pretty wild. Like, OCs are wild. Go get it in Yahoo and CBS. And when I do my Yahoo roster rates, Zach Neto's like 26% rostered as of Saturday. I mean, I know he's maybe some don't think 100% should be there, but 26% for like a stud shortstop, what are we doing right now? And that's just one example of many, folks. So go check them out and check out your waiver wires. All right, Ben, you ready to do some fab recapping from the weeks, what we did in the world of add and drops? I think we'll start 15s. I'll let you go first.
All right. So this is main event one for me. I added Tyler Black. I dropped Ty France, so this might be a little controversial, especially in a 15, but I had my first base. What was my first base? Let me get this. I should know this by heart by now. I have Cronenworth playing first base. I also have Nolan Schanuel, who I added, and I felt Schanuel and France were pretty similar, and I think Schanuel, he's batting leadoff for top of the order for the Angels, and he's been doing better. I think Schanuel has some speed that France doesn't, so I had a cut. One of them. I didn't need three first base on my team. So France was the odd man out. I got Black for 18, runner up with 8, which wasn't terrible. Then on this team, I also added Mitch Spence. I dropped Luzardo, which was an awful, it was a bad year to be in on Luzardo. $8, no backup. Then I had to find a replacement for Campusano, end up with Kyle Higashioka, his backup. Dropped Albert Suarez, $2, no backup. And then I added Chase Silseth. I dropped Ryan Weathers, $2, no backup. Main event two. So I'll just say, so this is where I dropped Cedric Mullins. He went for 231. I kind of like that because I don't think
he's
that good.
At least they had to spend some money for you.
Yeah, I don't mind throwing like a grenade out there and seeing who grabs it. But cause I think in Curlin's main, ironically, we were the only two mains that had him available. I mean, it's my fault for that's the reason. But I think he went for 235. So pretty expensive for someone who has kind of fallen off a cliff and had a good week and a half. But I was upset when I dropped Mullins last week after seeing what happened this past week. He had 3 steals and a homer and played like every day. But he's sitting tonight, I think, or he was 0 for 1. He sat yesterday versus lefty 0 for 1 tonight. I hope that he stays as bad as he's been because it's a little sting. But in this one, so I got Brendan Rodgers. I was surprised he was available, and I got him for only $12, runner before. I dropped Eddie Rosario, who – so this is the main event that I've been doing really well in, and I've been playing Rosario way too much. Of course, I add him the week after he hit the 3 homers, and he was not that good since then. and Perez kind of, so I dropped, well, you like this one. So I added Lamont Wade Jr. I dropped Wenzel Perez, $8, $5 backup. Hopefully Wade comes back on the weekend. I'll need him to play.
Started rehab on Sunday, so he should be a few days away.
Yeah, so it sounded pretty optimistic. They were, Rodgers and Wade were both late ads for my bid list because I saw them late when I was like double, triple checking my who's available. And with Rodgers, I need runs and average. So I'm like, that's perfect. I don't care if he doesn't steal or doesn't have the best power. That's what I need. And Wade, he bats like third. You know, he gets on base all the time this year. A lot of runs, decent average, some power. So I figured it's what I needed. I can, Rosario and Perez were kind of just blah. Then I got Cal Quantrill. I dropped Albert Suarez again for the stream against the White Sox. I $4, no backup. And then I added Hunter Harvey, dropped Max Meyer, $3, no backup. I have this, so my closers on this team are Kyle Finnegan and Hector Neris. So I'm trying to just
planning ahead.
I'm just trying to step. So my backups right now are AJ Puck and Harvey. So my thinking is hopefully Scott gets traded to the Cubs if they want to trade for someone. Then Puck becomes the closer. I don't know, I'm just trying to think of all those things right now. It's not fun, but at least I have two closers for now. And yeah. I'm just trying to make sure I don't have to bid too much.
Let me ask you something real quick because you mentioned the Max Meyer thing. I saw a tweet today made a lot of sense that the Marlins have lost like every starting pitcher they have, but yet they still won't bring Max Meyer back. Like, what is going on with that? So,
well, it made it easier for me too because I wasn't one of the ones that spent $50 on Meyer. I got him for $4 when I added him, so it was nothing for me to drop him. And
if he gets called back up this week and pitches well, you know how much that's going to go for. So you just set the curve on Mullins. You'll probably set the curve on Meyer pretty soon too.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get people to blow fab in my lease. It's a good strategy sometimes.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah, so he was my last. Those are my four ads in that team. Currently, don't have a, this is the team I don't have a bench right now because I have Josh Young, Lamont Wade, and I have Garrett Mitchell. If they all come back, I'm going to be golden, but I see them come back soon. Main event three, I added Spencer Arrighetti after I tweeted about him getting blown up last week, but he had a good matchup. I dropped Ryan Nelson, $12 back of 10. And then I added Ben Rortfit. I dropped Miguel Amaya, $2, no backup. And then my Olak.
Well, real quick, I like the Arrighetti pick. I think I might have dropped him in one OC this week, but I like him in deeper leagues for sure. And I think he's, the blow up sucked, but I think there's something that we saw glimpses of something where if it's close, it feels like could be totally wrong though.
Yeah. It's the Rockies on the road. He's pitching for the Astros. So the win potential is great as long as he can go five. And I don't know, like you see those awful starts, the chances of them being as bad again are pretty small. I think like he may go have like a 5-4 ERA in five innings, but that's not going to hurt you.
Yep.
Yeah. So I figured why not? And then my Olak, I got Wade again. I dropped Mike Tauchman, $6, no backup. I got Dakota Hudson for a stream, dropped Albert Suarez again, $2, no backup. And then I got Ben Brown for a buck. I dropped Jesus Luzardo. Brown might be back this weekend, and figured I could hold a spot, no backup on Brown there. So
that's a nice pickup right there on Ben Brown. He's going to be very popular if he comes back because he's popular beforehand. Yeah. All right, that's all your 15s?
Yep, all set.
All right, so my Olak didn't get the expensive guys I was hoping for. They went for more than I wanted, so I was going – I guess bargain hunting kind of in the outfield because I need a lot of outfield depth and we'll see how this works out. I actually had corner infielder settle here, so I was able to drop Anthony Rizzo for Luis Matos, 7 to runner up of 2. I think Matos good average, a little bit of pop. Like I like Matos, I like Elliott much better, of course, but with the injuries, Matos will get to should get to play pretty regularly, add some steals. So like the upside there. I added Austin Hayes and dropped Kevin Pillar. Pillar's okay, stop me before you've heard this. Platooning, so is Austin Hayes. I'm aware of that. Pilar's platooning and just not producing, or Hayes at least platoons and produces. So I stashed Hayes for now. He's basically one injury away from playing every day again. And, you know, maybe Mullins sucks and Hayes takes back over there. It's just kind of a spec thing. It was 6-0. I expected a little support, but nothing. So I could have gone cheaper. And then I had some other pitchers ahead of this. So this was down the waterfall, but I got Luis Medina. Dropped Cody Poteet. He's on the IL plus lost his role this week. Medina's pitching on Monday against Anaheim, and I expected him to pitch against Sunday, but I've seen mixed results on if he's getting the two-step this week or not. So we'll kind of wait and see there. I've always been a Medina guy. I know there's a ton of, you know, if his control's off, it's a disaster for him, and I'm very well aware of that. But we've seen in recent starts, we've seen the really good and the really bad. I think there's a ton of skills there, especially the strikeout department. So, yeah, I got Medina. Technically, he should face Arizona this weekend unless they mix with the rotation. So, Medina for a buck, drop Poteet for his two-step this week.
The Sunday two-step's always scary.
It's very scary. 100%. Especially
with a fringe guy like that, you never know.
Yeah, because if he does and he moves to next week, he gets Angels again, so that's not the worst thing. But then he gets Baltimore to finish the 2-7. The Angels start's not even interesting enough for that. Bubba and the Bloom, Auction League 1. I don't think I got any, but no, I did. Austin Hayes again dropped Spencer. I gave up on Torque. I might regret that. I know he's playing well in AAA, but I literally, the rest of my bench is IL, so that's why I grabbed an outfielder because I needed outfield depth. And even though Hayes platoons, that could backfire, but needed something there, and there wasn't a ton for the liking. Auction League 2 that I'm in for Bubba and the Bloom. Got Luis Medina dropped. This is where I dropped Arrighetti. I might regret that. It was 2-0. It was strictly for the 2 starts. I needed counting stats in this one. So might be overlooking that one right now. But I do like Arrighetti going forward. I will echo that one. And then, yeah, that's it for me. Let's talk 12s or Yahoo. What do you got?
Yeah, and I don't want to miss it. Uncle Ted real quickly asked about Landon Knack. I don't know if he's going to start this week. I know he was a big if. He was big on, I think, the RotoWire pod they covered him. I like Knack, but I don't know if he's going to start this week.
That's what I said on Thursday's Fab podcast. I was very worried about it. It was like he came up for the spot start, but like he's technically not scheduled right now because of the off days they have coming up. They don't really need a dude again for a little while. So I don't know if Knack's going to be, you know, a Knack in that rotation, I guess is the word. I don't know. But that's the only concern. The skills are good, but it seems like he's just kind of a extra man if needed. And, you know, Clayton Kershaw just got shut down for a few weeks, like shocker there. So Knack might get another chance before you know it, but not this week.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So here's my Yahoo 12-teamer daily league for those in case they forgot. So over the week, this is what I did. I dropped Kyle Bradish. I dropped Jeremy Pena. And then I added MJ Melendez for Ryan Jeffers. Reminder, MJ Melendez is available as a catcher in Yahoo. And I thought he was starting to catch fire and hasn't really been anything special yet, but catcher's kind of rough right now in general. So I'll just wait it out. He's playing full-time again, it seems like. So I'll see what happens. I streamed Griffin Jacks a day early. I needed the save. And I added him on Saturday, and then he got the save on Sunday. But oh well, that's what happens. But don't look at this one. I added Jalen Beeks. I dropped Tyre Kinley. I've been struggling for saves in this. I'm considering punting them, but I have Robert Suarez and Ryan Stanek, and Stanek's not really a closer. I don't know. It's a mess right now with my saves. It's a keeper league with NA spot, so I added Christian Scott. He was available, threw him on my NA spot. Then so this is the stream. So I streamed Keegan Thompson for Griffin Jacks. Thompson pitched that game, but he pitched in like the sixth or fifth inning. And then I dropped him. I dropped him this morning, Thompson. I added Spencer Horwitz, who's first base and second base already on Yahoo, so that's nice. It's an OBP and slugging league too, so he's going to help there. And then later in the morning, I added Spencer Turnbull, and this might be controversial, but I dropped Tyro because, like I mentioned, it's on base slugging, and he's not doing very well in either of those. Yeah, he's not stealing.
Not an ideal spot for him, that's for sure.
And it's even more shallower than a OC. So I thought, okay, well, someone wants to add Tyro. I'm sure he'll sit out there for a while until he heats up, hopefully, because I have him in a lot of NFBC leagues. But I needed a starter, and I figured, well, might as well add Turnbull now for the Detroit start this week.
Yeah, I understand the Tyro discussion. I think I've had a Substack question mentioned to me, and then Curlin mentioned it last week, especially in 12s. I think he dropped him in an OC last week, if I remember correctly. I can see the Estrada drop just from the production standpoint. He's been better. Like, he had a good week last week, I'll say that much, but it's 1 week, like, show me more type stuff. He's not running. That's what everybody wanted. I get it. The team doesn't run. It's bizarre. But, like, there's other guys, like, say Zach Neto was out there. Say, like, there's options. Like, if Tyro's a middle infielder, I'd honestly rather have Michael Massey than Tyro Estrada. So there are going to be a lot of opportunities of players better than Tyro. Totally get it. It sucks. I still think he's a darn good ball player, but this Giants team, I'm telling you, man, it's a rough watch these days. It's a rough because it's just so frustrating more than anything. So we won't go down that rabbit hole right now. All right, my three OCs here. OC one picked up Spencer Schwellenbach. Told you I got him. Dropped Kyle Bradish 8-6, so that felt good. This league, I for my Anthony Rizzo fix, picked up Josh Bell, who wasn't starting on Monday. Woo me. $7 with no runner up, and there was like not many first base options. So that is what, like, I told Ben off the air, like, I basically put 3 first base eligible guys in all at $7. Like, I'm getting one of these 3. That's just how it's going to be because I have to have one. And then I did get Tobias Myers. I dropped Kevin Pillar 4-0, no runner up there. That's why I said the Tobias Myers bids are fun because went for a lot more in the leagues. I got him for $4 in this one. So that just goes to show you the OC world. OC2, this one I'm proud of because I have a pretty good team going for now. It's fluctuating but still hanging around the top of the leaderboard. When I mentioned the Jordan Montgomery stuff earlier, going for 200+, I got Jordan Montgomery for $33 with the runner-up of 24, drop Kyle Bradish. That's a speculation I would take because I mentioned it recently. Montgomery's looked a lot better his last few starts. We got to remember he missed spring training because there's a ramp-up period, yada, yada, yada. Whatever excuses I want to give you, I will. But you look at the last few starts from Jomo, three straight starts at three earned runs or less. He's thrown 12 Ks over his last two starts, you know, four walks. We're seeing the improvements as the season's come along. So I'm optimistic in that regard. And when you look at Arizona coming up here, Montgomery gets Minnesota this week, which is hot and cold. Dodgers next week. But if he's an ace, he was fine versus those teams before. So I think he's close is what I'm saying. Not an auto start yet, but a guy that I could see a lot of fun in the second half potentially. So I was very excited to take my chance at Montgomery in that one.
I like that.
I got Sean Manaea, dropped Spencer Arrighetti, 5 to runner up of 1. Manaea has been outstanding of late. The ERA will not justify what Sean Manaea has been doing. He's got the pitch mix change that Ryan talked about recently. And when you look at Manaea as a whole, you know, he's picked up, he's 4 wins now at 13 Ks in his last 2 starts. He's got 23 in 3 of his last 4. When you look at the Sierra, it's still 4-1-2, but this is a guy with a 14.5 K to walk. The last month or so has been pretty strong. I'll take my chances with the pitch mix with Manaea. I added Tyler Black, dropped Anthony Rizzo. That was my corner infield move, 4-0. But luckily in this league, I picked up a second corner infielder because of the struggles I've had. And I picked up Nolan Schenwell, dropped Kevin Pillar, 2-0. So, and Schenwell's actually been playing decent leading off, gets Medina in Oakland tonight. And with Black not playing, that was an easy switch for me. And then in OC3, which we have a really good team leading the way, and it's not me, I picked up Tyler Soderstrom. And this is the one I was talking off the air to Ben with. It's so much fun because Soderstrom was popular this week, very popular the week before. We just mentioned how good his month of June is. Well, I picked up Tyler Soderstrom, dropped Nathaniel Lowe, who's been platooning and not been productive. $22, I thought, sweet. No runner-up bid. Zero. That was cool. And then I just did like a YOLO when he's back in the lineup tonight after missing part of Sunday's game with soreness. Picked up Eloy Jimenez, dropped Jimmy Garcia. I don't really need saves that much. I have other guys. $3, runner-up is zero. I'll take a chance on Eloy for $3 all day long, see where it goes. That's an easy drop if it doesn't work out. So this is the fun of OCs, Ben. Like some of these moves. I spent $25 in that league for Soderstrom and Eloy without a runner-up bid anywhere. That was cool stuff. But that's the world I live in.
So what do you think about the Eloy not running, being able to run in the first game back?
Well, he was back in the lineup today. So,
oh, he is?
Yes, that's why I say he's back in the lineup because that's why I lowered my bid. I had it higher. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take my chances. I'm going to drop it down because he still had 4 at-bats. He played most of the game. Still don't love it. Trust me. I hate the idea that he's already sore on the first game. But when I was blocking my lineup, saying he's in the lineup again. And I'm like, okay, let's enjoy the week to 3 weeks we probably get out of him. But for $3, I can do that. That's a streaming price. We didn't break the bank. Let's see what we got. But yeah, when I saw that, I wasn't over. Like I saw that, I went straight to my phone because I was I wasn't near my computer. All my bids that I had Eloy on dropped them down to like $2 or $3 everywhere. I'm like, okay, if I get him for cheap, he's like 4th on the waterfall now. Fine, so be it. But we're not breaking banks for Eloy right now. So we'll see.
It's like right. Stan. The way he
yeah,
runs.
Stan. Who would you? Here's a question. He's out at least 4 weeks. Would you drop Giancarlo Stanton?
If he's my only injured guy, yes. It's probably not the case, so I'd probably drop him.
Yep. Okay. Couple listener questions here before we head on out of here. Stephen Crawford, he says, "What are we thinking about David Fry?" Yeah, he's come back to earth a little bit here, kind of as expected. Still worth the catcher roster spot in a 10-team league. Other guys available, Yainer Diaz, Francisco Alvarez, Soderstrom, Wilson Contreras. I would take all of them over David Fry.
Yeah, I kind of stopped reading when I saw Yainer and Francisco Alvarez. I'm like, exactly. Yes, definitely switch it.
Yeah, in a 10-team league, it sounds like it's a one-catcher league. Just stream the heck out of that position. Like the joke I always make is almost treat it like a kicker in fantasy football. You play the guy until he gets hurt or he starts slumping and pick up the guys. If all these guys are available, if Yainer Diaz is on your team and he struggles, you could easily switch to Contreras or Alvarez real quickly, and it would be a lateral or a better move still. So I would definitely drop Fry and pick up one of these other guys.
Yeah, I'd add Yiner and just stick him in there. He's batting over 300 the last 3 weeks. He had that four-homer week.
Yep.
I've just put Yiner in there and don't think about it for a while.
Yep, Yiner's the best one on this list. And, yeah, as long as he's healthy, he'll have his slumps. But what we saw recently, that's what Yiner does. So you got that going for you. Some guy named Ryan Bloomfield, he says, is Ben coming to FPAS this year?
Yet to be determined, Ryan. I'm in a friend's wedding in November, so I got to see how that's going to work out. But I do want to go out eventually.
It's kind of, I mentioned that you asked me off the air. I'm like, he wants to. He's working on it. I just don't know. But then he throws that out. So beautiful stuff there.
It's tough in New York. It's a long flight.
It is. That's why I don't go to the Miami one. So I get it. Ryan Roof, our buddy from RotoWire, says, what was Ben's biggest focus in the second half of the season when competing for the main event overall?
I'm getting picked on today. When I saw Ryan's question, I'm like, man, he's making me go back in time a bit. And I had to bring up my team in the NFBC archives. And I kind of remembered, it's going to be hard to forget this team for a long time. But so based on how I finished, and I remember this, so it was steals and saves. I had tons of power. I hit on Rowdy Tellez and Christian Walker in the draft. So I had tons of, I think I was like top five in the overall and runs, homers, and RBI for most of the year, if not the whole year. So that was never an issue. I ended up dropping Rowdy eventually too, because I didn't need his power and his average was a liability at that point. So I remember it was like September and people went crazy trying to bid for him. But it was the steals. I remember I had at Josh Rojas. He was available. He got me like 20 steals. So I'll never forget this. So with the saves, so I remember I drafted, it was the Cubs. It was Robertson and Jordan Wicks. And I ended up going for Wicks. And that was, I struck out. I won Robertson. I never got him. But I drafted, it was also the year where Gabe Kapler said that, it wasn't Camilo's job at first. I forget who the guy was. He was a journeyman.
He's with Texas now. Not Miller. Well, that's going to bug the shit out of me.
Yeah, it's been two years.
I'll check it out. I know exactly what this was, because when he signed with Texas, I'm like, oh, he's going to close for him. He's actually at Kansas City now. Oh, look. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, so I ended up drafting Duvall and whoever this guy was as my – because I didn't trust Kepler.
Will Smith.
It was Will Smith, yeah. So he said it was going to be Will Smith, and I drafted him in the top 200. And then I took Duvall just to be sure. I'm like, I don't want to mess around with saves. So I only had 9 saves points on the year, but I ended up fabbing Jorge Lopez when the Orioles – he was the Orioles closer. And so that saved me from being able to finish that high, because without getting Lopez when I did, it would have been tough. But I remember, I think Lopez kind of fell off at the end of the year. So I was trying to get saves, but it was really the steals where I made a lot of ground up. And I this doesn't really matter, but it's an awful thing that I remember, is that I didn't add Lopez the first week I added him. I missed out on 3 saves because I didn't trust that he had the role yet. And if I added those 3 saves, I would have finished second over Steve Weimer, I think. But it's whatever. But yeah, it's, you have to be really cognizant. So I went on Rob DiPietro's show that year, and he shared with me like a thing that he does for the overall, where you look at who's around you, what's the spread in like the top 5% above and below you, like this, the categories. And then you kind of estimate how many points each category is worth. So it helped me a lot to focus on steals and like saves versus wins. Cause those are so tightly bunched and there's such a smaller category in terms of totals that everyone's more closely together in the standings, which makes sense. Like saves are always bunched up for the most part. Wins can be too. Steals a little bit less, but they're more so than homers, especially RBIs and runs. Those were kind of like, they had no value to them at all for me. But it was of course attacking the steals and the saves. And that's how after that season, I saw how I was successful being short in those categories. And so I've always made it a focus to really make sure that I'm strong in runs, homers, RBI, average. I tend to draft where I'm a little bit lower in Ks because I value the ERA and the WHIP more than the Ks. I feel like you can kind of volume your way into Ks. And it's like everyone knows how bad a blow-up start is. But those are the lessons I try to take out from that season. And now with the new rules, this is pre the bigger bases and the pickoff rules. Steals are definitely easier to find. Like we talked about Jake McCarthy tonight. He was widely available in 12s. There's other guys too, like Blanco was kind of a bust on the Royals, but guys like that, you can always find steals. And like we've seen this year, homers are hard to come by. And so I probably went a little bit overboard, but I don't know, trip down memory lane.
No, it's awesome. It's awesome because that's one of those things that I always struggle with when people talk overalls. I'm like, hey, I've never really been in an overall. I just try to win my leagues. And I've heard you and I've heard like the guilds talk about it. And I've heard other guys talk about it that you guys start like so focused on certain things. And you're like, you started talking the stats is where, you know, you lose me real quick. You know, the percentages and all that stuff. Come on, you know, I'm gone in that picture. But, yeah, it's fun to listen to because it's a whole nother level to this that I know I joke about a lot there. I'm like, I don't think I'll ever have the time to put that in there. Like I'm at the run real pure. If I ever win something like that, like I can compete in my leagues. I can see my numbers there. I know where I'm at to start putting in the overall stuff is crazy. I guess the one thing I'll say, and if you did mention it there, I apologize. When did you start focusing more on the second half stuff? Because we are technically in the second half of the season. When did you make a shift from, hey, I'm doing well in the league, but I want to win the overall. I got to focus more here.
So I remember last year, Waxman in his Fab Report was printing out the previous year's standings, and I was able to see how when I got up to that point where it really mattered. Because like once you hit the top 10 in the main event, it's like, oh my God, it's like serious now, and I have a shot of doing something crazy here. But definitely now in this, so we're at the midway point. I think I'm already looking at like the stats. I know people say you can probably, I think Ryan said he waits till July probably to look at categories. But the guilds actually, you mentioned him, he made a great post today on Twitter about what to do in the OC for the overall. He basically broke out what place you are in the overall standings and what your mindset should be right now for how you're handling the overall. And if anyone hasn't seen that, check out the guilds. His tweet, if you play in the OC and you're interested, it's a really good post. Doesn't apply to me because I don't play OCs, but I mean, the same mentality probably still stands for the main events. You just got to adjust what place you're in. But definitely now, since like, because if Ryan or anyone is in the top 30 in the main event right now, you want to stay there. You don't want to fall out. And like everyone always talks about like what stats to target to move up. Like with my main event, that's my best main event right now. I kind of noticed I was losing ground in runs, at least in my league. So I addressed that by adding Lamont Wade and Brendan Rodgers. Cause like you can also drop in stats too. It's still early enough for that to happen. So you want to make sure that you're still addressing where you may think you're strong and you may not be anymore because of things are changing with playing time or production. But definitely now I think by when the calendar turns to July and you're competing for an overall, or you think you are, I think that's when you really need to start looking. I wouldn't do what I did. I mentioned the Rob's method of like looking at 5%. I didn't go on his show till like August, but like all of end of August and September, I was updating that every week, trying to see how many points I needed to target for how many points each stat was for my fab runs. I was really making a point to take advantage of that, like the movement I could make in each category for the most gain.
Interesting. Yeah, because like I know I've heard Slack talk about a spreadsheet. You know, all those guys have their different things. So it's fun. Again, all out of my peripheral of consciousness, but it's interesting to me because it's something I wish I was better at. And again, haven't been close enough to an overall, but I just peeked at the guild's tweet. I'm in like the B+ range in a league, so I have a chance, you're saying. In the league, I got Jordan Montgomery in, so I got an angle if I can push. That's a big if, but we'll see. It doesn't help when you have Josh Lowe on your bench and he gets 3 home runs in a few days. But you know the Josh Lowe experience from last year very well. That's what I've been going through. It's been fun.
Man, I was complaining about Josh Lowe all the time last year.
I remember that very well. I think of you every time I have him on my bench. He does well, trust me. But we will wrap it up right there.
That's it's been not a fun good.
Show. It's been a fun show, as always. Ben, before we head on here, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
Yep, my weekly article on Sports Ethos coming out every Sunday morning. I was a little late the 1 week. It was Father's Day, and I went out, so I apologize for that if anyone was looking for it. And it didn't get posted till after Fab, but hopefully it helped in the Daily League. But yeah, just doing that, and I'll see you guys next Monday.
Yep, next Monday, Ben will be here, as it's already been scheduled for once. He doesn't have to wait for the text late Sunday, early Monday morning. We got that lined up. And make sure, again, follow him on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at BDNtrick. Hope you guys have a great week. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 676. Catch you all next time.